You're listening to Graphic Novel Explorers Club Podcast, an audio book club.
Greetings, explorers. I'm one of your hosts, Johnny, joined by
Dennis.
And no Frankie today. She's off doing some sort of secret mission or something or other for Wayne Enterprises. Today, we are discussing Batman, Ego, and Other Tales by writer and artist Darwin Cook. Rest in peace. We hope you've already read today's title because both of us have read the book, so beware, spoilers ahead. Explorers can share their opinions and thoughts with us by leaving a comment on our Facebook page or over on Twitter and Instagram at GN Explorers Club. Graphic Novel Explorers Club is available wherever fine podcasts are found, including YouTube. So today we are looking at Batman Ego and Other Tales, and we read the deluxe edition. And have you read any of these stories previous?
No, I've never read this one. I think this is amazing. I guess these came out. Well, this is a collection of different graphic novels and issues. Although I will ask really quick, Johnny, it says tales and they spell it like the tail of a cat. But is there a play on words or something?
A big chunk of the story is a Catwoman story called Selina's Big Score. So
that's
I'm
true.
Sure that's the pun. Yeah. The first story was published, which is Batman Ego, was published in 2000. And then a couple of these others came from different series, like Batman Gotham Knights, number 23 and 33, Batman Solo, number 1 and number 5. And this collection was published in 2007. And Darwin Cook passed away in 2015, 16. Mm-hmm. So I thought maybe this was a collection that was done in honor of him. But no, it was apparently just a Darwin Cook collection of stories.
Yeah, I love his work on New Frontier. I wasn't aware too much of all his works. I knew about the Catwoman one. Ego is a new one for me, and it was a good surprise. What kind of scares me is like he only died at 53. That was super young. So
yeah, I think he had cancer though.
Oh yeah.
I think that's why he passed. I could be wrong with that. And mm-hmm. If I am, I apologize. But it was really sad. He is bar none one of my favorite comic book artists and writers of all time. I absolutely love his style of illustration. I like the way he colors things. Like there's a story in this series with the Spirit where Batman and the Spirit team up. And just like the color schemes, things will be sort of done in monotone where everything's all the same mm-hmm. color. Like each panel will be colored a specific way for each character. We talked about this when we did the first Parker book.
Right.
In an early episode of the show where I even love the way he draws fingers.
Mm-hmm.
I love Darwin Cook's work.
He is definitely like, he evokes what I loved about Kirby. You know, like you said about fingers, there's something about just the way he draws things. Like when you look at his stuff, that's what you think. That's a comic book. That's a comic book hero. That's what it should look like.
Yep.
And it's really amazing. I forgot if we talked about it on the previous episode, but what I like too, and what's interesting is, you know, you look at his stuff and it's very kind of Art Deco-y, but I mean, he's not necessarily cornered into that style or at least that look. He actually helped animate the Batman Beyond opening sequence, which is, if for those who don't know, Batman Beyond takes place in the future. And so that was, you know,
Neo-Gotham.
Neo-Gotham. So, you know, there's a little bit of an Art Deco look to it that harkens back to the original animated series, but it was obviously futuristic. And so that's a different take on Batman. So he's not necessarily pigeonholed into that. But his art style, fantastic. You know, I like his different takes on Batman. You know, there's the traditional one that we see in Ego, but then there are different variations. The one that's the issue that's all black and white, there's almost a Frank Miller-like Batman I like.
With that big giant chin.
Yeah, it's just I just like that he's not afraid to like, he's not lazy. Like some authors, writers, or artists, I should say, you look at them and like a lot of their characters look the same. They don't seem like they're really growing as artists. And he definitely looked like he wanted to evoke something depending on the story and catered the character that way.
Even his illustrating style were like, he'll use silhouettes to convey like action inside a story. And it reminds me of Akira Kurosawa, mm-hmm. where he would use a silhouette of like your hero but you would see the bad guys with the look on their face of like fear or contempt, whatever it was. And just a master craftsman of drafting comic books and illustrating comic books and coloring them. And
I think Darwin has an eye for keeping the focus on what needs to be focused on.
And well, it's almost like his characters, which we'll talk about Selena's big score. There's a character named Stark, and Stark is very blunt, minimum words. And I'm pretty sure that Stark character is an homage to Richard Parker. It's very minimalist and like whatever is the, you know, it's just blunt and minimalist. And that's
right.
Like he's drawn to those characters and that's his drawing style. But
I don't mean to jump too far ahead, but on Stark, I loved his characterization. It evoked, I don't know if you're familiar with his work too much, but Lee Marvin, you know, from the Dirty Dozen and such. It just kind of had that feel to it. Like, well, you could feel
that Selena Big Score story felt like it was set in the Parker world. Mm-hmm, like this was a side trip for Parker, but he couldn't call him Parker. So he made him Stark, which is named after Richard Stark, the author of the Parker series. So I was like, oh, this is a Parker story, but set in the world of Batman and Catwoman. One thing I wanted to bring up, two things about Batman and Bob Kane, the creator of Batman, is Sasha and I have been watching The Last Dance, the documentary about Jordan's final year with the Bulls. And one of the things in that story is like I forget which NBA final series it was. Oh, it was with Utah. He had food poisoning and went out and played the next day, even though he was severely ill. He was off to a slow start, but then wound up just like firing up, scored all these points. They won the game that day, even though he was sick as hell. And throughout the whole series, he's talking about just like how his willpower to overcome things and be the best at what he is. And I was like, oh, that's fucking Batman. Like Batman is the type of person who's like, has just inability to let his physical self let down his mental self, you know, like his mentality will overcome even his physical pain,
which makes him such a unique hero in the sense that he's not invulnerable like Superman. I mean, he's just a highly trained dude, but he still gets shot. He still bleeds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you see that throughout the different stories. And in fact, these where it's like he's not, you know, he doesn't walk away from a fight unscathed.
Yeah. Yeah. There's consequences.
Exactly.
After having seen The Last Dance and then having read this book, I was like, oh, they share that mentality of like, I will win at all costs. I don't care.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
And then the other thing was, so I forget what it was, but I had watched something, a documentary or something like that recently. And it was talking about how during the Prohibition era, how corrupt the police were, especially in Chicago. And I mean, it wasn't just there, but that was a real epicenter of corruption. And basically, police departments were really extensions of the mob. They were paid to do what the mob wanted. Politicians were put in place, you know, by these mobsters and funded to do what they wanted. And I was thinking about like, oh, well, you know, Bob Kane would have been a young man in his teens during Prohibition. And then he would have come of age during this time of like absolute corruption amongst law enforcement and like at a political level in like Chicago, New York, these bigger cities. I was like, oh, that makes sense why Gotham was written by Bob Kane to always be corrupt. Like the people that should not be corrupt were corrupt because Bob Kane came of age in a time of corruption. So I just thought that was an interesting parallel there. Jumping into this first story in the book, Batman stops a plot by Joker to steal all this money. In turn, Joker gets arrested and stopped by Batman, and one of Joker's hoods gets away and winds up with like over $400,000 worth of money. But he realizes once the Joker's arrested, I'm more afraid of the Joker than the cops at this point because I double-crossed the Joker. And when Batman winds up catching up to him, and this guy winds up, we find out he killed his family. And Batman's like, well, why'd you do that? Joker's in custody. You didn't have to be afraid of him. And this hood's like, what are you? He gets out all the time. What are you talking about? And then he winds up killing himself. And this really weighs heavily on Batman. I thought this was a really interesting premise of like the guilt Batman feels for any, I'm sure anytime anybody's killed by the Joker or anybody else, when he thought he had stopped the criminal and actually did nothing.
It's almost a meta commentary on superheroes and Batman specifically, where the villain knows, like you said, yeah, you arrested him, but he'll get out and then he's going to murder my family. So yeah. I'd rather, instead of having them tortured by the Joker, I'll take them out and then I'll kill myself. What's the point? And, you know, and Batman's like, well, no, but actually, yeah, you're right, because he will get out and he will, you know, break free. And it really talks to how ineffectual in some ways Batman is in, if he was in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about this in other episodes too, where these basically people that have the same amount of money as like Elon Musk or Bill Gates, this extreme wealth, and they turn to like superhero shit, when really if they just put a fraction of their fortune into like funding schools and just donating to organizations that help with prison reform and stuff like that, they'd have much greater impact than if they spent $1 billion on a flying Iron Man suit, you know?
Well, that's the funny thing is I think Joker ended up robbing from a charity $400,000. I'm thinking the Wayne Enterprise could probably write that check in a second.
Yeah. And Bruce Wayne could probably write that from his personal fortune. And that'd be like right. You give $4 away to a charity.
Yeah.
So this and other things that have been at the introduction of the story have been weighing on Bruce, just like he's just kind of tired of being Batman. And every time he thinks about quitting, the personality of Batman kind of stops him from doing it. But this particular time, a character I've dubbed Ego Batman shows up and is as brutal with Bruce Wayne as Batman is with criminals. This was a great duality to show the anger of Bruce Wayne rearing its ugly head as this Batman creature.
Well, it goes counter sometimes. I know we've talked about this before, where we've alluded to, depending on the universe, that some cases Bruce Wayne is just a facade, right? Batman is really the only thing that exists. And Bruce Wayne is just this fake character.
He's the mask.
Yeah, he's the mask. But in some ways, this shows that, no, there is a duality. And in some cases, he has this secret desire to have a normal life, but he also feels this obligation.
The guilt of letting down of breaking the promise he made to his parents to make sure no one ever has to go through what he went through.
Exactly.
Yeah, we soon learn that this Ego Batman sort of propositions Bruce with what you were just saying, Dennis, about how if you want this regular life, here's my proposition is you let me free. I'll become the Batman that will make sure characters like the Joker can never harm anybody else by killing them. And Bruce is like, no, that's not how I do this. And the Ego Batman's like, well, that's right. We'll separate and you won't even know what I'm doing and I won't know what you're doing.
Just like Harvey Dent.
Yeah, yeah. Or as he says, as in this story, we come to find out that, you know, the Red Hood became the Joker. Bruce feels could have saved himself from becoming the Joker just by not letting that anger overtake him and delve into madness. And Bruce is like, no, I will not allow that to happen to myself. Mm-hmm. Even though that would be the easier route to go, I'm not going to allow myself to do that.
And it brings up the constant question with Batman and any superhero, really, which is, you know, you keep trying to, you know, do the right thing and say, well, I won't kill. That's Batman's big thing, right? Mm-hmm. And he refuses to kill the Joker. But how many innocent lives has he cost and indirectly basically killed as a result of sparing the Joker?
But, you know, it's also, I think this is a good parallel to say sort of where people want extreme justice by like the police, like street justice from police officers, which that's not their job. Their job is to arrest, gather data and evidence and present that to people, to a judge or to an attorney. And then the attorney goes before a judge, either as a defendant or a plaintiff, and lets a jury decide what the justice should be. And even though Batman is a vigilante, that's sort of, I think, his faith is, look, I'm assisting the police in stopping these people. And then I leave it up to the legal system to act accordingly with their punishment. Whereas Ego Batman's like, well, no, let's just kill him. And we're getting around it. So,
right.
Yeah, I think that's the parallel there. But Bruce, so Ego Batman and Bruce kind of get into this debate of like, well, no, I mean, yeah, we should separate, mm-hmm. become a duality. And Bruce eventually convinces Ego Batman to stay as one whole person because they can be a symbol of fear to criminals, but remain a symbol of hope to decent people. And the only way to do that is by not committing murder.
Right.
Which I thought, yeah, it was great. It was, I don't know, it was a very like a classic moral tale of like the devil, and you know, fighting the devil, using the devil's own logic to beat him.
Right. No, I love this story. It's one of the things that I love, that you can take a capes and cowls, you know, hero, but then you don't have to just have, you know, comic book classic beat 'em up. So this is a real delving into a psyche, you know,
of a damaged person.
Yeah, really damaged, and you know, facing the horrors that he has helped create. You know, it touches upon things like even the death of Robin and how he's gotten Robin to be part of his crime fighting, and then it clearly a death in the family has happened because it showcases Robin's costume, and it just delves into like, you know, these different sides of Batman. And what's interesting is Ego Batman's actually willing to die. He's like, fine, you know, if you want to live this life, then just kill me. And then, you know, you don't have to worry about me anymore. But Bruce Wayne realizes, like you said, that they both kind of have to exist for Gotham's sake. And so it's not killing Bruce, and it's not killing Batman, and it's not separating them. It's having this combination. And I thought it was a fantastic story. It was just, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty. Yeah, it was great. It's one of the better Batman stories, and this is that we've read in the entire run of the podcast. Like, I enjoyed it way more than Killing Joke or even Batman Strikes Again or whatever it's called.
Right. Well, you know, like I was thinking of Frank Miller and The Dark Knight the whole time I was reading this. And I just liked it way more because it has that self-narration, right? That inner voice. But it isn't this bitter Batman who's just staring at this diseased city. This is a man who's like looking at his diseased mind and really questioning, am I good for the city? Am I creating more problems than I'm solving? And I like that at first it starts off like, is this the Scarecrow gas? What's happening? You know, and then in the end, it's not some supervillain. It's not some, you know, mind trick that Joker's trying to play with him. It's really just his own self guilt. That he has to, guilt that he has to battle with.
Yeah. No, yeah, it was a fantastic story. There's several other smaller, shorter stories. Like there's a couple black and white Batman stories in this, or Batman Black and White, I think is the actual series. Yeah. Like I said in the beginning, there's a Spirit and Batman team up story. There's a Harlequin story in here, kind of centered around Batman. But the other major big story in this is Catwoman, Selina's big score. And this is a high story, somewhat of an origin story for Selina Kyle and this whatever continuity this is. And this one also deals with a lot of guilt because Selina Kyle screws over that character named Stark and winds up, there's a lot of guilt around that later in her life when they meet back up to re-team on this heist against the Falcone mob. Is it DC or Marvel that does the Magia?
Oh God. I know what you're talking about.
Mafia, they call it Magia.
Yeah, I think that's Marvel. I think DC's willing to actually call it the Mafia. Yeah.
I don't know. This was a really fun story. Oh, yeah. This is pure 100% Darwin Cook. It's a heist story. There's mobsters, there's moles, gals, you know, there's just so much. This is just a pure Darwin Cook story.
And once again, I don't know if it's chicken or the egg in terms of Batman the Animated Series. And I don't know if Darwin, because I know he worked on that series, but he wasn't the primary creator. Obviously, that was Bruce Timm. I don't know if Darwin was a natural fit for that show or what have you. But the art style here, once again, is that neo retro look, which is, it's almost timeless because it's clearly more modern day, but no, it I has.
Don't, this feels like a 50s story because there's no use of like, there's no mention of cell phones. Oh, well, there is a computer. Never mind. So, yeah.
And like some of their commando gear is a lot more modern.
Yeah, that's true.
And then stuff like that. But once again, it's what I like about it. And maybe that's the appeal of things like, I don't know, Blade Runner and some of those, where there's so many different technologies that you can't really place it. It's not like, wow, that's very 80s or even that's very 50s. Like there's elements of the 50s definitely here, 60s, and as well as modern things like computers. And so it's almost timeless because you're willing to accept the certain technologies because there's like an old fashioned phone, but also there's a high tech computer. So yeah. I don't know what you call that exactly, but it really works well for not dating the material and allowing you to, you know, visually accept the everything.
Well, and the anomaly of a computer doesn't feel out of place.
Right.
Within this own world that he's created. Yeah.
And you don't have to overthink like, oh, that's a really chunky Apple II computer. That wouldn't have existed then or something like that. You just know this is a weird blending of everything.
Yeah. Yeah, guys and dolls, but there's also computers. No, this was a really cool story. There's like double cross. Is there going to be a triple cross? You know, all sorts of stuff like that. Seaplanes, just everything cool happens in the story.
Right. And then you really see, I mean, you saw in other frames on the Batman pages, but there's a lot of energy that like action wise that he just conveys so well. The whole train heist is
amazing when she's like
you can feel
jumping.
The energy. Yes. Yeah. The jumping one, you feel the speed. Like that is amazing. Like he draws it in such a way where it's blurry, but not, and he uses what are those weird dashes. And I don't know. It just conveyed a lot of the energy and movement that I've seen it done on other comics, just not this stylized and as well.
Yeah. No, it's a great story. I'm glad we chose this. We almost chose the second series in the Parker comics that Darwin Cook did, but this was a nice. This was nice because I think, and Frankie has expressed this several times, like we've all kind of grown tired of Batman stories, mm-hmm. and this was such a nice, refreshing spin on Batman. I don't know, it was great. And
oh, no, absolutely,
yeah. It was great. I highly recommend it.
Oh, yeah. The artwork alone, if you just want amazing artwork, it's from top to bottom. It has this retro appeal to it. That's amazing. The colors are amazing. The Spirit crossover, which I think is like a different comic book company, right? I don't think they're owned by DC. I forget.
Yeah, I don't think Spirit is DC.
But that's an old school, like 30s or 20s. And for him to walk in on the Batman world is amazing. His character designs, like I love all of them. You know, Catwoman's amazing. His different Batmans are great. It's just, if you're going to get a collection of Darwin Cook, like I thought New Frontier was it, but this has like a lot of stuff.
Well, I think they're good, like a good complement to each other. Well, on the Batman and New Frontier, he barely shows up and he's got the like 1930s Batman movie look, kind of like the floppier ears. Like they're, mm-hmm. it's like a, it was like a, like they were knotted off. they're not real firm. Like they don't serve any real purpose. They're definitely a costume piece. They're not, you know, nowadays the cowl has all this technology in that. And that was just a mask. So.
Well, I love his Batmobiles are definitely like 1930s.
The old like school, or just a big bat head on the front of the car.
But the only thing that I will say that made me sad was the fact that we're not getting any more product from this guy. I mean, his artwork is just so amazing. The fact that his life was cut short and we're robbed of more amazing art and stories from him. I mean, and like I said, it's not just him drawing great. I mean, these stories are written by him and you can see his love of the lore and he just paces everything so well.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I agree. He's an amazing artist and it's sad that we will not ever get any more stories from this guy. And then on that sad note, this is our final episode of the summer special. We'll be back as always with our Halloween special and our Christmas special because we grew up in an era of cartoon specials, so we keep that going.
Maybe we should do a preview special the night before we preview our Halloween special, where we lay out what the fall's going to bring, like they used to do.
The fall TV special. Or yeah. No, we should do it in August, the season preview. Remember, they'd always do like the cartoons that were going to be like, when you remember when the Pac-Man cartoon was going to come out, and you're like, oh my God, there's going to be a Pac-Man cartoon.
Cubics the Rubik's Cube or something like that. Rubik's
Team
the
Turbo.
Oh, yeah.
Or Turbo Teen, whatever he was, the kid who turned into a car, which they mocked on or paid homage to on Rick and Morty.
Did they have someone actually turn into the car?
Yeah, Morty. Morty would turn into a car. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I missed that episode.
Yeah, we're going to be off for a couple months, but we'll be back in October with the Halloween special, and then December with Christmas, and then we'll come back next year with a new episode.
Hopefully COVID-free.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah. But yeah, thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. It's always fun doing these. And if you have any recommendations for books that you want us to read, we'd love to hear them. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Be kind to each other. And bye.